Well, the Robins certainly aren't Bobbins, and for those of us who like a straightforward narrative when it comes to relegation, well, things just got a little more complicated. And joining me round the table here at League Express HQ to make some form of sense about relegation and everything else in the world of rugby league, we're joined by Matthew Shaw.
Hello.
Aaron Barrett here.
Hello, mate.
And Martin Sadler. Good morning. So hello everybody and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show, a fixture preview for Super League coming your way shortly, as well as Championship and League One of course. We're also going to be talking the women's game, as we'll be joined by former England captain and record appearance holder Andrea Dobson will be coming on the show, and we'll be hearing from Martin Coyd, Chair of England Wheelchair Rugby League, as preparations continue for this weekend's matches against France. But before all of that, there is only one place we can start. And that's to the crackers situation that is relegation. Who wants to go first? That 6 points, Aaron. Aaron, you've got a cheeky grin on your face. I'm coming to you. 6 points separating 5th and 12th. Wow.
London will still go down.
I'll tell you what, Matthew.
Hang on.
That's Aaron's contribution.
You said if London won in Catalans, you would revise your...
I also said they both lose last weekend. So the fact that they've both won...
If London beat Hull KR, will you revise it?
Well, if London keep winning, they're going to just pull clear.
But but the question, I guess, is with 11 games left, how many points ensures safety, do you think? 20?
I think St Helens are just about
St Helens will be all right, just. I think Warrington might get there with a couple of games left.
I think you've got to say at least 20 now.
I think 20.
Yeah.
Because don't forget, they've all got to play each other, so they're all going to be dropping points. So it's pretty inconceivable for all seven to go and win, sorry, all eight teams, including fifth, to go and win lots of games to get well over 20 points. So,
see, I was sort of thinking about this from a supporter's point of view, and you know, if I were a supporter of all these clubs that are near the bottom, for which club would I be the most worried if I were one of their supporters? And I think at the moment it's got to be Leeds Rhinos, because they're going to be losing Callum Watkins, you know, who's, whatever you think about his recovery from that terrible knee injury, is still one of the top players in the competition. Losing him, we don't yet know at this stage exactly who is going to be coming in to Leeds, but certainly they seem to me to need quite a lot of reinforcement, perhaps at half back and maybe in the forwards as well. And I just can't see where those players are coming from, which of course doesn't mean to say that they won't come from somewhere, because obviously all the time there are players coming in from the NRL or from other clubs in this country. But at the moment, you know, Leeds are at St Helens on Friday night. By Friday night, they're going to be second bottom, aren't they, if they don't...
Well, yeah, someone's getting points.
Someone's getting points.
Yeah, they could be bottom if
they could be bottom if they draw. Yeah, if they draw. So it's bad news for them. And you then sort of look at the fixtures for the last 10 rounds, and it's anybody's guess, isn't it?
Yeah, the one variable for me, sorry, is, are we assuming London are favourites on Thursday night?
At home, I would say they are, yes.
Okay.
But with Tony Smith coaching Hull KR, that's another complicating factor, isn't it?
That for me, would be the first time in 19 games that London have gone in favourites into a match. They've had 18 free hits. Nobody's given them a sniff. And if they win Thursday, then they do go favourites to stay up, which brings a change in pressure and a change in mentality, maybe. There's a lot of twists and turns left yet. I still believe London will be the worst team over 29 weeks, and worst is probably the wrong word, least best.
I think, to answer the question, I think 20 points would guarantee safety at the minute.
I think it would.
Because, well, the reality is, the bottom three at the minute have won a third of the games.
Yeah.
If you win a third of your games over 29 rounds, it's just under 10. So if you win 10 games,
if you win 10, it's over a third.
But if you'd have said at the start of the year, you have to win 10 games to guarantee safety... Yeah. You'd be like, wow, that would make it the tightest Super League ever. It'd be comfortably the most wins a team has had and gone down. If
I'll tell you one of the things that's a bit ironic about all this as well. When we had the Super 8s, people were saying, you know, the trouble with the Super 8s is that all the attention is focused on the bottom four in the Super League. You know, the uncertainty, nobody's bothered about
the bottom.
Nobody's bothered at the top. But you know, we've now got just one up and one down, and all the attention is still on
the bottom. I will still argue the criticism of the Super 8 concept and that there was meaningless games was absolute nonsense. You cannot do anything about it. If the Super 8, if the league table had been like it is now during the Super 8s in Super League, it would have still it would have been just as exciting. And likewise, it would have been just as exciting after the Super 8 split because everyone would have been that tight racing for the top five. It makes no difference what league structure you have. It's just the way it works. If there's a big gap between the teams, there's less riding on it. When they're closer, sure. there's
the
more riding on it.
Isn't it?
I'm saying is that the criticism of the Super 8 structure that it brought meaningless games was complete and utter nonsense.
That's right. When you talk about the top five, by the way, I think now there are three teams that are definitely in it.
Yeah, I think Hull are in.
Hull's surge in form has been fantastic, actually. I thought they were great at Castleford last Thursday night. And I know Hull could absolutely prove me a complete idiot this weekend by being hammered at the Catalans.
Yeah, third v fourth.
But I don't think they will. And I think they've now got over that period of ridiculous defeats, and they're really playing well.
I don't think they'll make a fool out of you, because I agree. I think they'll make the top five, but I still think that they have that shocker in them.
As long as it's not the last weekend of July, they'll be pretty comfortable with that. I think if the semis were tomorrow, it'd be a Saints Hull final, wouldn't it?
I think so.
It'd be the best final as well. I appreciate it. I won't be allowed into Warrington now after saying that.
Jake, how was your trip to Hull KR, by the way?
Fine.
Was that all right?
Yeah.
Good.
What would have been?
It was with the Tim Sheens finger. Just reminded me. I meant to ask you last week.
He's come back. He's come back. He's got out.
Wearing red.
He's still alive. Yeah.
Good. Anyway, we'll go through relegation and also the race for the top five as we go through this week's fixtures. So we should really start with the fixtures and kicking things off on Thursday. I mean, we're going to know a lot by Saturday, actually, aren't we? And by close play Friday, because it's very lopsided this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, stupid.
Thursday. Game of the season, question mark.
Most important game of the season.
No.
It's the most important game of the season. I'm not saying it's the biggest game.
It's the most important game so far. I mean, the most important game is the grand final.
And then next,
but at this stage of the game, it's the most important game.
But there'll be a more important game next week because we're a week closer to the finish line.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's the most important game of the season so far.
I don't think it's as decisive as some people are suggesting it may be.
It's not decisive.
I think there's talk almost that, like, if Rovers went there and lost, they're doomed, or if London won, they're safe. I don't think it's as cut and dry as that. However, I think it's a big game psychologically, because, as I say, I think London are favourites. If they lose the game, Rovers will come back very, very upbeat. They'll have then won two in a row and lost to Wigan by a point under Tony. Yeah. And that again,
big improvement.
That again just says to me,
with Adam Quinlan back as well at fullback, playing really well.
I just think they're going to be okay. And when we get onto Leeds, I have the same belief with Leeds as well that they'll be okay. So me coming on here every week and saying London will go down every week is not because I think London are awful. Far from it. I think what they've done is something quite incredible with the squad. But I think they will be the bottom team after 29 rounds. And you know, this year they might win 8 or 9 games, so there was no disgrace in being bottom.
The thing is, if you watch them at Catalans, I mean, I can see exactly why you're saying what you're saying, but if you watch them at Catalans last Saturday, they looked anything but a bottom team.
Yeah, but let's say how it is. Should we read the Catalans team out, or do you want to, you know, like...
There's a lot of French players in this.
There's a lot of French players in there. There's also some big names missing, weren't there? Not as weak a team as I thought.
The
Broncos.
I'll say this about Hull KR.
McLaurin didn't play.
In many ways, it would be a shame if they went down. What they're trying to do recruitment-wise makes sense for what they do. They've got a reputation for paying over the odds for average players. I think if you look at what they're doing now, the four players they've signed for next year are of an average age of 24. The players they're getting rid of are the five that have retired / have been released are an average age of 31. So I think they're trying to do the right thing in terms of building a squad for the future, which they've never done.
That's Tony Smith all the way.
They've never done that. It's always been signing players at 28, 29, 30, big money. They've lasted a year or so, and then they've had to do it.
Neil Ludgell's maybe finally realised, but I think there's a conscious effort from Hull KR from top to bottom, isn't there, that there needs to be a bit of a sea change throughout the club.
Needs to be a different
starting with Tony.
Strategy.
Starting with Tony, who I would love to see, by the way, stay in the game. Here's a quandary for Thursday night, then, and I'm not I clearly am because I'm bringing it up, but I'm not saying it with any sort of intent. Jordan Abdul.
Yes. Great point.
Conflict of interest, you mean?
Look, we'll get on to Wakefield. I don't think for a minute they'll be in trouble going into the last weekend of the season. However, last game of the season, I believe, London away at Wakefield.
Alex Walker.
So, you know, what about when Salford play Reece Williams?
Just to say, these players are professionals. Like,
They are. So the issue isn't with Jordan Abdul, is what I'm trying to say. I think the issue is with the system. Yeah.
So that's Thursday night's game on telly. The TV game on Friday, St Helens against Leeds.
Leeds win. No, I'm joking.
They
acquitted themselves quite well over there, if memory serves, earlier in the
February,
year.
February, 27 points to 22.
Yeah.
James Roby's only ever field goal.
Harrell was outstanding, wasn't he?
He was. They were winning 22-10 at half time, and St Helens eventually won with 2 second-half tries from Wormsley and one from Luke Thompson.
I saw Leeds first stand on Friday night, as everyone knew they were on the telly, weren't they? But I was there. I again saw enough relative improvement in Leeds to make me think that while they probably will finish 10th or maybe even 11th...
Leeds are capable of shocking people.
If they get it together. I agree. I've seen improvement in them under Agar, week by week.
The defence near their line looks a lot better, doesn't it? It looks a lot better.
And they were playing with one halfback, and albeit one halfback who didn't have his best game in Richie Myler on Friday night. But when Sutcliffe went off with half an hour left, I think Cameron Smith went to stand off. Yeah. So they've got a bit of an issue at six, haven't they?
Which is why they need a new halfback.
Well, and it sounds like Ashton Golding might play on Friday night, which is a bit of a story, because Lolohi is away with Tonga, which kind of surprised they've let him go, really.
I tell you what, Golding's been playing fantastically for Fev.
Yeah, I'm led to believe he
really
has.
Really well.
Walker might not make it, they're saying. So,
well, I would like to see Golding back in, because I like him as a player.
But it'd be interesting what they do at six.
Yeah.
Can't play Cameron Smith there.
They've played him once.
Remember, was it a couple of years ago?
Wakefield, they were awful.
A couple of years ago, when I think it was the opening game of the season, and Golding had an absolutely outstanding game for Leeds.
He's a good player.
At full-back, defensively against St Helens, saved loads of tackles.
It's a blow for Fev, isn't it? I mean, we'll go on to the Championship, but it is a blow for Fev. Although they've only got one.
Yeah, they're doing well anyway.
Beat Halifax.
This is more about Leeds than Saints. I think if the Leeds of 5 or 6 weeks ago go to Saints, they'll get beat by about 40. But if the Leeds that we've seen in recent weeks go over there, I think they can compete. Do I think they'll win? Probably not. But the other thing as well with the bottom of the table, which I'm sure we haven't mentioned, is that I think Ulcar and London might as well be on 11 with the points difference at the minute, because they're 85 and 82 worse off than the next worst team. So, you know, if it's as tight as it is now, come September, points difference could well be decisive. And those two teams, I say, are a point for
The interesting thing about that points difference is it shows that Leeds haven't been losing matches badly. Mm-hmm. Leeds have lost a lot of games.
It surprises me London's is that bad.
Have you seen the points difference across the board, by the way?
Even there's only two teams in positive, or three.
Three. One of them, Salford.
Brilliant. And Salford's points difference is 77.
Yes.
I can't buy into this idea that Leeds are as safe as everyone seems to think they are, that they're too good to go down. I agree they've improved.
Nobody's too good to go down.
I agree they've improved, but so have Hull KR and London. So, you know, it's not just Leeds getting better.
I also think the Watkins...
So does that mean Huddersfield are in trouble?
Well, I'll come back to that.
That's a Wakefield.
You mentioned Callum Watkins there. He's obviously... congratulations to him. Yeah, good deal to Gold Coast.
I think he'll go really well over there.
When's his last game? Is this going
to
be his last
game? No, next week against, at home to Catalans is his next game. So they've got. I would imagine they've got something big planned, as they should, because he's an absolute legend of that club.
2 points would be...
2 points would be the perfect farewell. The fact that he's going mid-season as well just only further reaffirms the belief of everyone, I suspect, that they've got something big lined up mid-season.
They've got to have, haven't they?
Yeah, I think they've got to, yeah. Just one last thing on Leeds. I think Merrin's the obvious candidate to be the captain, isn't he?
I think he is, yes.
But I think I think in a poor team, he's been absolutely fantastic this season.
Shall we talk about Huddersfield v Wigan on Friday night as well?
It's funny, isn't it?
How do you? Because even Wigan, Adrian Lamb said that the table will look after itself, and he's right.
Yeah, we are all obsessed with the table, you know.
But it's 2 wins to 20 points.
If you win your games, you're safe, aren't you? You don't need to look at the table.
I'm not worried about Huddersfield.
3 wins for Huddersfield to get to that magic 20.
I'm not worried about Huddersfield.
Well, put it this way, if Lee Gaskell gets injured...
Yeah,
I'd be worried about Huddersfield.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Joe Wardle needs a knock on his thumb, doesn't he?
There's a few things.
McGilvery's missing for a few weeks,
isn't he? But they've got Ferguson back. Cudjoe's not... I mean, Cudjoe's massive for them.
Is Cudjoe back this Friday night?
No. I think he's probably another week.
Yeah, I think he'll be back this Friday.
But he's Ferguson and Cudjoe.
He will take a while to get back to form. You know, if you look at the way that Callum Watkins has struggled to get back.
I think
you
go on track record though. Martin Cudjoe missed the first 4 or 5 months of last season, came back and suddenly Huddersfield started winning games because he was setting up Jermaine McGilvery every week.
Absolutely, that right side is tremendous for Huddersfield.
I'm not worried about them yet, but like Martin says, if Gaskell went, I would become far more concerned. I think Huddersfield just need to worry about finishing 11th this year. You look at the team and the point that we made a few weeks ago when they were pushing, when they hammered Hull at Magic, hasn't changed. McIntosh, Dominic Young, Jake Wardle, Innes Senior, Oliver Russell, Matty English, Sam Hewitt, Cruz Lehman, who won in the 19, all homegrown, all going to be there next year, all have got a big future. So Huddersfield, this has been a tough year for them, you know, but the bonkersness that is this league means that if you go on a run, you're pushing for the five. If you go on a bad run, as Wakefield are finding out, who I'm sure we'll get to, get sucked in.
Still think with Huddersfield, it's similar to Hull. We said this last week. Couple of years, they'll be good. They will be a good team.
I think they'll win enough games. I think Huddersfield will win enough. They showed at Magic, didn't they? I know they caught Hull on a very bad day, but they showed that when
they've got great talent,
that from 11 games, what are they on, 14 points, they'll probably win 4, which will take them to 22, which will make them fine.
They'll be fine.
Shall we talk about Wakefield then?
Yeah.
I was at the AJ Bell as a normal civilian. On Sunday, and Salford were amazing.
Salford were amazing.
But Wakefield were not.
Nah, dark. Well, I'm going to go into bat for Wakefield there a little bit.
I'm just going off what Chris Chester said.
Everyone's talking about how Wakefield are in... Yeah, Chris Chester said they're in a relegation battle, and by the logic of the table, they are. But in reality, they're still some way off panic stations yet.
And bear in mind, that was a Wakefield side without Nine. Johnston, Tupu, Fafita,
Ashurst, Bachelor, Uwe.
When those four players are missing from a side...
Fafita's back this weekend.
That's a big thing.
I'd be concerned for Wakefield if Tupu and Fafita were going to be out all season.
Tupu will be back next week, I'm led to believe. Fafita will be back this week.
I'm not worried.
The other thing as well with Wakefield is that everyone's panicking a little bit at the minute, but by the end of this weekend, they're 4 points off the bottom now. By the end of this weekend, they'll be 4 points off the bottom at the worst. You know, they could be 6 if they go and sting Warrington, which they're capable of doing, but they probably won't this weekend. The issue they've got is that they've just got too many players playing busted at the minute. They need some bodies back, and they are getting them. I think Arundel's not far off as well. Kate and Brown won't be far away. So the cavalry is starting to come back a little bit. They lost Randall. In the context of the game last week as well, they lost Kermond after 15 minutes. So you're a back row light. They had to start doing all sorts of... I was sat in front of Chris Chester, and he was literally deliberating with his staff, what on earth am I going to do here? Because they lost Randall to a head knock, so they had to put George King to back row, then they had to move George King into the middle, then they had to move Tanguy Noah around. So they were literally scrambling around to get a team.
The concern I have for Wakefield is we always go on about their injuries, but when you're always going on about their injuries, you're wondering why they're always getting
injuries.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's a fair point.
Now, for me, when it happens over a prolonged period of time, it doesn't become luck.
But by the way, what I will say about Wakefield as well is Jack Croft's going to be an absolute star. I thought he was fantastic.
What do we read into Warrington of late, heading into this game against Wakefield?
As we've already said, missing Stephen Ratchford really crucially. They played the first 15 games of the season, 14 or 15 games of the season, with a spine that was absolutely unchanged.
You've seen how good Ratchford is as well.
Yeah, it was, you know, Ratchford, Blake Austin, Deck Patton and Daryl Clark. But Ratchford gets injured and it disrupts them.
Clark not play last week either?
I don't think he did, no.
Which however I made that up. No, he didn't,
Clark
didn't play.
We're going to be talking about coaches heading over to Rugby Union later in the show, but we have had someone from the other code, John Warrington.
Luther Burrell, yes. Well, I think you met him, Aaron, didn't you?
Yes, very good, very good. Someone that I imagine Super League will do a hell of a lot of promo work with. He's
very articulate,
very intelligent, very complimentary of Rugby League. Wow, I think he's done something elsewhere on another platform, hasn't he, as well, saying that, classing his Warrington teammates as freaks. The thing he said to me last week, out of a 15-20 minute chat, which struck me, was that I'll have to be fitter than at any point in my Rugby Union career to make it over here. He's obviously played the game up to about 16, hasn't he? He knows McGilvery, but that's from an England international. That's very, very, very high praise. And I think he's acutely aware of the fact that he isn't just going to be able to walk into the sport and slot in. It'd be interesting where they play him. Steve Price was coy, saying maybe centre, maybe back row. Looking at the size of him, geez, he's huge. I mean, height-wise, I think he's a back rower. I think he'll end up playing in the back row. Just Warrington, 6 points off the top. 6 points off, well, six points off the top, 10 points off of falling out of the playoffs. It almost feels like they're on a little bit of hiatus until the cup semis.
Limbo.
Yeah, they're almost certainly going to finish second, aren't they? You know, a penny to a pound.
Well, it looks it.
So
doesn't it?
They've just got to make sure they're ready for...
See, I suspect that Blake Austin could do with a rest.
I wouldn't be surprised if in the two or 3 weeks leading up to Bolton, they do start to rotate a little bit. I don't know what the situation with Clark was last weekend, but I can imagine there's very much a feeling from the top two. You know, Saints are leading the way with the notion of resting players who aren't 100%. I think Warrington are probably doing a bit of that as well.
I agree. Shall we talk about the other two games this weekend? The final game on Friday, Salford against Castleford, which is either, depending on if you're glass half full or glass half empty, is a relegation four-pointer or a playoff chasing four-pointer.
If Salford win it, they'll go fifth, won't
they? Yeah, they will.
I do have to go back to Sunday, Aaron, and Salford were just... Yeah, they were stunning, weren't they?
Do you know what? And again, this isn't comparing... Well, you know, they've got the trait that a lot of teams have got in Super League that when they are good, they are absolutely fantastic. But the thing that separates Salford for me is the brand of rugby they play. They are just a joy to watch. And if you were a casual specky in and around Salford... Manchester, you would be convinced if you went on Sunday to think, yeah, you know what, I'm going to spend 20 quid and go again.
For those casual Mancunians, you all got the Frank Sidebottom reference at the start of the show.
You know, that trio in the middle of Louis Hastings and Evelds, wow.
Evelds has really come strong this year.
Everyone's talking about Hastings and Louis, and look, I didn't give Hastings any goal thought points on Sunday, which in hindsight I probably would have done. Thinking back, I probably would have given him one. But I certainly wouldn't have been giving him more than Evelds, because I just thought, composed at the back, dynamite going forward, great support. He has turned into a wonderful, wonderful fullback.
Do you think Evelds ought to be in the England side, or Great Britain side?
No, I think there's too many good players in front of him. Ratchford, Hardacre, Tomkins, Coote.
If it wasn't for Lachlan Coote this season, Evelds would be a shoe-in for the Dream Team.
No, he would. I'm not sure that
most of those guys you mentioned, apart from Coote, are playing better than him.
I don't know. Ratchford was, wasn't he?
But he's injured now, so you know we don't know.
And Bennett likes who he likes.
we don't know when he's going to come back.
If Ratchford wasn't available for whatever reason, and he decided he wasn't, and I know he's going with Heritage,
they could do worse than taking. Yeah,
have we really talked about Castleford yet?
I don't know what to make of Cass at the minute. I mean.
Probably going to get fifth, aren't they?
They're in danger, though, of not getting fifth, aren't they?
If Salford play like they did against Wakefield, against Castleford this week, I could see Castleford dropping out.
They've got very similar problems, not as grave as Leeds, in the sense of they're playing with one and a half back. You know, and I don't. Again, I'm not trying to disrespect Jordan Rankin and Corey Aston, but Truman's having to do a lot of work, and
I think they're actually better when they've got Corey Aston in the side.
Yeah,
I think
that's fair.
Partnering Truman.
Truman looks like he needs a bit of rest to me.
It does to Truman. Is a young player with a lot on his shoulders.
He's played
Truman,
50 games for
Truman
Castleford already.
Looks like a player to me that needs someone to lead the team and for him to do his thing on the side of that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think there's a lot. Like
I think they're missing Michael Shenton as the captain as well.
I agree with that.
You know, that's the point.
There's a few things to take into account with Cass. They're missing Gale and Shenton, who are their two, I'd almost say, go-to guys in many ways.
Well, Gale is, isn't he? You know, the other thing as well, sorry, Matt, is that the guy who they've been so reliant upon over the last couple of years, McShane, just isn't playing as well as he has been doing lately.
But also, there's a real danger that too much is falling on the shoulders of Liam Watts, I think. You know, every week his stats are massive compared to the other members of the
pack.
But ultimately, he's going to run out of gas. He's going to need a break.
Be interesting to see what the league table looks like I think it's about a month's time. I think they play London at home in 4 or 5 weeks. And if they're looking okay for the four and they're well clear of the bottom lot, I think they'd rest.
I do think we're probably being a little bit easy on some players at Cass. I think you look back to that 2017 side, the performances of some of those players that then went on to get new deals, I don't think that they're playing up to anywhere near that level. I look at Greg Eden, I look at Adam Milner. I don't think they're anywhere. I think
Milner's been a disappointment. He was, you know, there was all that talk, wasn't there, before he signed his new contract of NRL clubs in for him, and there was some debate about whether he would go to the NRL, and he sort of hummed and hawed about it, but then signed a new deal with Castleford. I just wonder whether he might have been better going to the NRL, actually, because, you know, there was some, you know, he's not kicked on in the way that you might have hoped.
Those two in particular for me, Eden and Milner,
they're a club in transition.
Have not lived up to the hype that they generated, and I think, and I don't blame Cass, this happens. When you have a good season
Eden's dropped off since Shenton's been injured.
I mean, even McMeekin, I don't think's playing to the same level that he was. You know, McMeekin.
Oh, I think McMeekin's been actually quite good this year.
I think he's been decent since he's come back.
Oh, I think he's been. I don't think he's been
the best forward they've had. They're a club in transition. They are a club in transition. You look at the team last week. You look at the fact that Gale and Shenton aren't there. Alex Foster, who I think doesn't get a lot of the credit he deserves. Sounds like Holmes might be struggling to get back this year. So there's four there who are going to come back in next year. There are also quite a lot who are going to leave at the end of the year. There's certainly a bit of a sea change there as well as there is at some other clubs. I think Castleford are not limping through to the end of the year, but I think they're very much just trying to try and make sure they get in the five, and anything else is a bonus from here.
I don't think it's a guarantee that Cass are in the five.
No, I agree.
No, I certainly don't.
Well, Cass's last outing was against Hull, and Hull travelled to France on Saturday, the TV game, Catalans against Hull.
The Loop games are coming thick and fast now, aren't they, as well? Because it doesn't seem long ago that Hull were playing at Catalans, and Marks need kick that incredible field goal to win the game in golden point time. And Sneed finished off that game with four incredible, quite diverse kicks that won it for them. And I've never seen anything quite like that.
Can I just make a point on Catalans, though? I thought I was hardly done to a few weeks ago when I said there's no way that they'll be competing for honours at the end of the year because they have too many games where they're way off. The same with those frailties were on show again on Saturday.
And they've scored 20 points in three games.
They're not. They are not. They are not capable of winning a trophy.
It's worrying times for Steve McIntyre, isn't it?
I don't know.
Not worrying.
No, they're going to be in the five.
Yeah. Are they going to be in the five?
Yeah, they'll be in the five.
I think so.
They'll be in the five because when they play all right, they're better than most of the teams in the league.
Well,
but there's too many. Then they have games. I mean, in the last 5-6 weeks, they've not been anywhere near for four of them. I'm sorry. They are not good enough to win a trophy.
One of the problems for the Catalans, in my opinion, is that they signed Marty Smith at the start of the season, and quite frankly, is just not played as perhaps. I mean, they signed him as an organising halfback, which has always been his strength, but he's been in and out of the side. It doesn't seem to be playing with a great deal of confidence, and as you say, it looks now as though they want to.
Well, it's no secret that they tried to sign Theo Farge, and when you look at their cap, there's no way that they're getting a player who would command a salary like Theo Farge without someone going out.
Sure.
Could that be Gigo now? I don't know. He hasn't signed a new deal yet. He's been linked with the NRL. Could it be him? I've not heard anything.
Could
concrete.
Matty Smith go to Leeds?
Well, that's the TV game, Catalans against Hull. Of course, Catalans, it's back-to-back home games, which sometimes helps. Just to balance it up. But that's Super League. Let's talk about Championship. And before we get to the results, can we talk a bit about the Andrew Chalmers, Derek Beaumont conversations that have been had with you two this past week?
Oh, the 16 teams?
Yeah.
There's an appetite for it. I guarantee you that.
What do you make of it?
I'm not convinced.
I am pretty sure that there are a lot of leading chairmen outside Super League who believe that their competitions are worth a lot more financially than what they are, and I think they're going to be in for a pretty nasty shock when they take the comp out to tender. The Championship is a very, very good, it's a vibrant competition. It's stronger this year than it has been for quite some time. But if they can go out and get a TV deal, I think that would be simply incredible.
Isn't half the battle, though? I mean, people talk about realism and, you know, some of these chairmen have
perception
to
against
get real.
Reality,
and,
yeah.
But isn't half the trick in these kind of things about, you know, marketing and getting yourself a better deal is to puff out your chest a bit more than the reality
suggests? Well, they certainly need to do that. But what's crazy is changing the rules halfway through a season. You know, we've got an established structure. We should stick with it, certainly in terms of what happens for the rest of the season going into next season. If you're going to change the structure, don't change it straight away. We're going to have to look at the structure from 2022 anyway, aren't we?
Do they need to get something in place, though, before that 2021
date? Well, the thing is, I don't see what benefit expanding the competition to 16 does.
I'm going to tell you what the benefit is, from what I can gather.
Does it not bring in... Does it not get you Newcastle, New York, Ottawa?
But so what?
But that's... No, I'm not saying that's right or that's wrong.
But I think they're living in the dream world if they think that's going to make a massive difference.
That's why they are trying to do it, because they want the... Not the most valuable, but they want the most marketable teams in League One in the Championship ASAP.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that includes Ottawa. I can guarantee you that includes Newcastle.
Can someone tell me how a 16-team league works in terms of fixtures?
Well, it's extra games as well.
So you're then looking at a 31-round competition with some abash.
That's just absolutely crazy.
I can see the logic loosely in why they are trying to get it to 16 teams in terms of getting a lot more marketable brands in there.
And the investors in there as well. That's the other thing.
Well, Newcastle have got a wealthy background there. However, and scholars, if they turn around and say, right, well, Barrow and Rochdale are going this year and we're going to slam the top four from League One in, we're going to pick four. Like, what, you know, London Scholars, Newcastle, a couple of others get in there. Whitehaven, who are top, by the way. And then they think that they're going to go to BT or Amazon or Facebook and get a big bag of cash. They're going to be in for a big shock. It's a good comp, but the fact that it ain't on telly at the minute outside of Toronto paying for it to be on telly tells you everything you need to know.
But I do think they need to do something.
And this is why I'm not completely against it. I understand that they're trying to get the competition in as strong a position as possible for 2021. Whether this is the right or the wrong way to do it, we will only find out with time. But I understand and I appreciate the need to try and do something with the Championship. The Our League thing, has been a great development. Fantastic. It's got more eyeballs on the Championship than ever before. The numbers clicking through the gates at Championship games, albeit with Bradford, York and Widnes in there who weren't in there last year. But I'm afraid if they think the long-term answer is like a broadcaster turning around and saying, well, here's £500,000 a year.
But the Our League thing, I mean, it's interesting you talk about the Our League thing because, I mean, that is a great development, you know, but the trouble is it's only appealing to existing fans, isn't it?
But what it's doing is it's giving them evidence that here's what we're attracting watching our games on a live stream. They've not had that before.
And it's allowing them to sort of show what the quality is in the Championship. I think it's a sensible thing
An issue with that. Let's face it, Toronto's viewing figures haven't been bad. They've not been bad.
Around about 40,000 or
so.
The other issue, just quickly, which Martin sort of touched on, is an integrity issue for the game in that. So, well, all right, we're going to 16 teams, but how the hell are we doing it? Are we keeping all 14 in and putting two up?
Much more to the point here, I'd much rather see a 14-team Super League come back than a 16-team Championship.
Well, right. I am of the opinion that the long-term solution for the game is probably two 14s or maybe even a 14 and a 16.
Two 14s.
I don't think there's enough pie to go around.
I think actually it was John Flatman, wasn't it, who said you expand the cake rather than reduce the size of it.
You don't increase your cut of the pie, you increase the size of it.
That's what this is about. This is about trying to do exactly that.
Well, on the pitch, Toronto head into Saturday's big game with Toulouse this weekend in good form, having dominated Dewsbury.
Christ, they were good.
And speaking of Toulouse and being good, what about Swinton, eh? Another storming second half performance.
What a win.
Congratulations to Swinton on Championship survival.
Well, not quite, because Barrow, out of nowhere,
can we just check that Halifax aren't already in Bolton camped outside the stadium?
All I can say is it's a good job that Halifax played Bradford this week, because it's the only team that's capable of actually...
I was going to ask you, though, that's nearly winner's days on that game now between Bradford and...
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is, I think. Yeah. I think that's a great description of it.
I think that both teams can probably afford to lose one more game this season, and given that Halifax have to go to Toronto yet, they've got to beat Bradford.
Oh, I think Halifax are not in the top five.
No, I think they're all right.
They've blown it.
I'll tell you why. Hear me out. Their home form over the last 2.5 seasons, they've lost 3 games. They've got all the tough teams to play at home.
I'm just finding it difficult to see
six points behind
and Lee slipping up.
Six points behind with 10 games to go.
If Halifax only lose one more game this season, they'll make the top 5.
Just looking at the Championship, though, this weekend, I think the most interesting... Well, there are quite a few interesting games, but probably the most interesting for me, apart from Toronto and Toulouse, is Swinton versus York. Swinton, you know, really look as though they're putting together some decent form. Mm-hmm. And York are lying 5th. And, you know, want to hang on to that top 5 place.
Would
be a remarkable achievement for a promoted
and
club.
Whatever happens to York from here on out, they've had a fantastic season.
Absolutely. James Ford's done a great job.
If you look at their running...
I hope he doesn't leave York.
I agree. I hope he doesn't leave York.
I think there is mileage left in that project.
They have a very, very tough running.
Yeah,
I think they will... drop out.
They'll fade. And who do you think will come back in instead? Obviously Halifax.
I think that's...
Sheffield is still there as well.
Sheffield is still there.
I think that's the five. I think that's the 5.
Sheffield will fade purely because they've got too many injuries to keep.
I think there's only York who could drop out, and I don't think they will. Lee, by all accounts, Lee were very good against Bradford. Although
I think
Bradford
Lee and Featherstone are both.
Featherstone,
yeah.
They still, look, let's call it how it is, they still rely very heavily on the Leeds stint. And whether that continues next year when mandatory reserve grade comes back, we shall see. But Ryan Carr.
Are Feth going to go down that hybrid model, though, next year?
I don't know, but that feels like the next step for Featherstone, doesn't it?
It feels like the next step for a lot of teams, to be fair.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, Bradford operate under a hybrid model. Lee have already said they are going to do it next year. Yeah. I'd imagine York will probably do it, won't they?
Well, Bradford v Halifax on Sunday will be on the Our League app.
Oh, is that the stream game?
That's the stream game, yes. Well, that's Championship. In League One, that's certainly got interesting as well. I mean, Whitehaven suffered a defeat at Newcastle, which means Whitehaven's lead is now cut to 2 as the Scholars beat West Wales on Saturday. So London Scholars back up to second spot.
Weekly shout-out for Keighley. Well done for sacking Craig Lingard.
Reece Lovegrove is now the permanent head coach at Keighley now, and they were beaten at the weekend by Oldham. Well, the race for the playoffs have certainly intensified, with both Workington and Doncaster picking up wins, with Donny beating Hunslet on Friday
night. Can we have a word about West Wales? I don't like to be negative, but they're averaging, they're scoring less than 9 points.
I hate to be downbeat. I hate to, you know, stick the knife in further, but I think that probably is an improvement on this time last year, isn't it?
It genuinely is.
So baby steps and all that. It would have been impossible for a team who lost every single game last season and probably ended up with a points difference of minus 2,000.
And with no Jill Redge.
Yeah. It would have been impossible to suddenly go to, we're going to challenge for the playoffs.
One of the problems for a team like West Wales is that some of the other weaker sides have actually gone from the competition. Mm. You know, Hemel would have been a side they might have been able to beat.
Oxford and Gloucester,
Gloucester were not very far from West Wales, I suppose, compared to most other clubs.
Newcastle.
So you know, and the same thing really in relation to Coventry, who have improved a lot this year, but have still only got 6 points.
Newcastle are doing the business quietly at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah. And they got over 1,000 at the weekend as well, by the way.
That was helped by Whitehaven's travelling support.
Yeah, it was. Good point.
The more I look at it at the minute, I can see Newcastle going up.
Yeah, I think they're on paper they are certainly the strongest team, aren't they? I think Nick Newman's a good pick up from Coventry.
Mm. Big game for them this weekend, though. They played Doncaster away, and Doncaster have had one or two decent results recently, including winning at Hunslet.
Can we just touch upon the other Our League match, which is on Saturday, I think? Yeah, on Saturday, Keighley against London Scholars.
Jermaine Coleman, the job he's done there.
Actually, that would be quite remarkable, wouldn't it?
You know, you're throwing names across the board. If you were going to have a Coach of the Year award across all three comps, Gary Charlton at Whitehaven, almost certainly in there. Jermaine Coleman would have to be in there. Dendy James Ford and that, but these top two in League One for me, in terms of where many people expected them to be they are. I mean, Whitehaven, you know, they were pretty substandard last year, weren't they?
I think this year, to use your phrase earlier, a transitional year, I think that would be quite fair enough.
And they've got Carl Foster back playing as well, which is great for them, because I think
good player.
From knowing him and
great
speaking to him, he loves the club as well. He absolutely loves the club. So it seems like they've got their stuff together. I think it'd be great to get Whitehaven up there. But in terms of Scholars Keighley, if Scholars go to Keighley and win, I think people will we'll be taking them increasingly seriously.
Well, let's move on to other versions of the sport now. And the England Wheelchair Rugby League team will be travelling to France, the world champions, this weekend for a two-match series. And to just judge the mood in the camp on Tuesday night, I caught up with the head of England Wheelchair Rugby League. Here's Martin Coyd.
A mixture of excitement, some trepidation. We've not played for 2 years. We're playing the world champions. But the excitement comes from how well we've prepared. We've got a great group of players and they're ready and they need to be tested. They're looking forward to this test and it's a great platform for us for our Ashes tour coming up later in the year.
And it's all heading in one direction as well. I mean, you mentioned the Ashes tour there, but in the distance is also the World Cup as well. And obviously France are the world champions. That must be good to get a sense of the benchmark, basically, of what you have to come up against for that World Cup when it's back in England.
Yeah, 2021 is very much on the horizon. We don't talk about it much, but we know it's there. One thing I didn't mention is the Aussies are coming here, so there's a kangaroo tour in 2020 as well. And it was all building up to this fantastic global festival of rugby league when, you know, for the first time, wheelchair will be alongside the women and what we call the running game, you know, the men's professional game in something very special, which will be the, you know, the biggest sporting event in our country in 2021.
And putting it on that level, I mean, what's that meant to give it that kind of where it is on an equal footing?
It has been fantastic. And since the World Cup was announced, our players have been on the stage at the launches all around the UK. You know, James Simpson, one of our guys, who's a Leeds player, Leeds Rhinos player, he's an official ambassador and does an awful lot of work alongside the likes of Jodie Cunningham and Luke Gale. And, you know, John Dutton and his team are doing a fantastic job of marketing the competition. What we don't want to do is it to be a surprise to anybody in 2021. You know, we'll be playing next year in the World Cup venues and pushing the profile of the game in Sheffield, in London, and in Liverpool. So, you know, we build up something which will be really exciting with a view to, you know, selling out the MS Bank Arena in Liverpool for the World Cup final. And England will be playing in that.
The product sells itself, really, for anyone who's watched it. I mean, I watched one of the games in the last World Cup. It was being streamed, I think, on YouTube. And it's such an exciting sport and it's such an exciting version of the sport. For anyone who stumbles across this on the BBC website, that it's going to have an instant impact, isn't it?
Yeah, it's immediately recognisable as rugby league. You know, we play five-a-side and we play on a pitch that's 40 metres long and 20 metres wide. And instead of everything being 10 metres like the running game, everything in our game is 4 metres. But we play out sets of six. We tend to kick towards the end. You know, a forward pass results in the opposition getting the ball. If it goes in touch, the opposition get the ball. If you want to take a drop kick at goal during the game, you can do so. And you'd strike it in something that people would look like was a volleyball play, if you like. But we play with a size 4 rugby ball and... it's really accessible. The people who watch it for the first time live can't believe what they're seeing because the skill levels are phenomenal. You know, to be able to control a wheelchair, catch, pass, move, you know, evade tackles, and there's a great skill in defending because we defend by removing a tag off a player's shoulder, similar as you would see in tag rugby league, which is often played by kids. That's how you affect a tackle. And a play the ball is similar. You know, we don't play it with our feet. But you have to touch it on the ground and pass it backwards. So it is accessible. If you've got 5 wheelchairs and a flat indoor area, you can play our sport. It's a very, very recognisable variant in our game. And, you know, I think once again our sport is leading the way, as it has done for 125 years nearly, of pushing boundaries and trying new things. And where we really are unique is that we have disabled and non-disabled athletes playing on the same field at the same time. And we also have male and female playing, you know, for England. So there are no barriers to anybody participating at the very top.
And it's pretty rough as well. There's a lot of rough and tumble, isn't there?
Yeah, it's rugby league. And, you know, there's a physicality when the chairs come together. And, you know, I'll often hear coaches saying chair in front, which is like getting your body in front and getting your shoulder in. We play 80 minutes, and it's as tough as the other variants of our game.
And there's also a domestic season which is underway as well. There's a Super League and a Championship as well. How's the domestic game heading into the World Cup in a couple of years' time?
Yeah, it's starting to grow because there's visibility, and you know, we're 3 years away from the World Cup, and younger athletes are just thinking, you know, maybe I can just continue to improve and get one of those coveted jerseys around that time. Our top two teams currently are Leeds and Halifax. They had a fantastic game on Sunday just gone, where Leeds edged it, having gone behind, three tries behind, they edged it by 10 points, you know, with a proper rugby league score. And it sets up well for the rest of the season. But you've got clubs like Argonauts in Dartford who are starting to build, Hereford, North Wales Crusaders, St Helens have got a good side, and so the established clubs are getting stronger. And then what's really exciting is new clubs. So Warrington Wolves are now on the map and getting great support from the Super League club, and you know, and the foundation are right behind that. The Army have started playing, which again is a fantastic thing. And so yeah, we are definitely on the right pathway to 2021. Loads of hard work, but lots of exciting opportunities.
Martin Coyd there, chair of the England Wheelchair Rugby League. Wheelchair Rugby Leagues, I mean, we talk about the women's game a lot, and we talked about the Learning Disability Super League, but Wheelchair Rugby League, when I've watched it on telly, blimey, there's nothing's left, is there?
I wouldn't play it. I wouldn't play it. Be petrified. Yeah.
Tell you what, yeah. They're built, you know, we're talking about, there's a lot of talk about England building towards three World Cups, and I guess the wheelchair one is the one that maybe, you know, gets overlooked almost sometimes. But Jesus, if you were a paying punter and you wanted to watch some rough, tough, intense sport, you could do a lot worse than following England through the World Cup in 2021 at that, couldn't you? It is a brilliant, brilliant sport. It's so incredible.
And I think those two matches this weekend will be streamed on, I think, the European Federation's website. I'm pretty sure that's true. But look on the RFL's Twitter.
I tell you
feed
what,
anyway.
Just a point, which, you know, people say that rugby league doesn't get like a lot of TV broadcast and whatnot. And I know it's not technically TV broadcast.
It's the future, though, TV
broadcast. You look at like this weekend as an example. So
it's just ridiculous how much you can watch, actually.
Yeah, it is.
It's just ridiculous.
On Saturday, I had to pick between watching London or Toronto. I couldn't watch. They're on at the same time.
The issue, and it goes back to the 16-team champ debate, it's not the amount of rugby league that's on telly, it's the amount of money rugby league is getting for what's on telly.
That's right.
Well, from Wheelchair Rugby League to the women's game now, and last week League Express reported on the news that former England captain and record cap holder Andrea Dobson has decided to retire from international competition. And on Tuesday, I caught up with Andrea to discuss her career highlights.
You know what, I think any World Cup to play for England and any match to play for England is a highlight. For me, it's probably travelling to the Southern Hemisphere, New Zealand, Australia for the World Cups, and captaining the World Cup in 2017 was a real highlight for me, because obviously, you know, it's a dream to play for England. And when I first started watching rugby at 12-13, I went and watched the women's games, and it was a dream to play for my country, let alone captain it. So that was a massive highlight. And you know, 2013 for me, when it was a home World Cup, you know, and a lot of my friends and family got to go and watch, and you know, one of the games we played at Featherstone, my home club. So that was a massive highlight for me. But there's a lot, but yeah, probably that and captaining my country was a highlight.
And over those 16 years, obviously the women's game has been transformed, and you know, from Great Britain to England and beyond. What's been the major changes that you've noticed over those 16 years playing international rugby?
Probably the recognition for women's sport, and you know, well, rugby league, women's rugby league, and women's sport in general. You know, when I first started playing and representing Great Britain and England, it was self-funded. You paid for yourself. Social media wasn't their thing then, so it was hard to get the game out there and the players out there and the sport out there. So you know, the recognition's changed massively. You know, the support for women's sport in general and rugby league has massively changed. So the support for the program, you know, that the girls get now compared to what, you know, it was 15, 16 years ago is massive, and that's how it should be. Women's sport should get the support and the coverage that is warranted for it at the level they play.
And you really were a trailblazer in many ways, because you made your Great Britain debut just at the age of 16, and the honour of having the number 8 shirt as a heritage shirt, that's quite an achievement as well.
Yeah, massive, you know, and I think the heritage number they only came in last year. So when we went to France last year, the heritage numbers were given in. It's not something that you kind of give a thought to, but, you know, I played in the first game that was officially an England Rugby League game, and that was in France in 2007, I think it was. So, yeah, I started at prop there, and any number for me would be an honour. But to get a starting number and a starting pack number, because I've probably played my most games for England at front row or 13, so to get the 8 was really special, and it's, well, obviously it's something that I'll have for the rest of my career and when I finish, so yeah, it's really special.
So all we're talking about is retirement from the international game. Your club career continues at Featherstone Rovers, and we've talked about the international game. What's been the development at club level? I mean, we hear about the Women's Super League, obviously the Championship and League One has followed suit as well over recent years. So how's the club game developing in England?
Yeah, again, players who played with me and before me who probably don't get the recognition through social media and things like that, and it's, you know, it's a bit humbling to get the recognition now because I'm retiring, but there's a lot of women, and a lot of women played at club, and a lot of women played at Featherstone with me and at Wakefield. And it was always a pioneering club for the women's game, was Wakefield. Well, it used to be Wakefield before it was Featherstone, but, you know, it was always a pioneering club with some great players. But I only wish the recognition and the social media and the way the women's game is now could have been the same 10 years ago. It probably a whole different ball game, but I think it's brilliant. I think that, you know, the support from the RFL sector, the Women's Super League, and even the sponsorship now and the recognition the players get from, you know, external companies and external bodies and things is great, and the recognition that they get, and the standard of rugby, it's streamed now, it's high quality, and it's commended by people who watch it, and it's really nice to see, and it's really exciting to see the player who's been around for a long time, the game's being live streamed, and, you know, certainly in the international games as well, just being out there and people can watch it and they can understand how good the game is and how good the players are and how athletic they are and professional they are. And it's a massive positive for me, and it's a step in the right direction, and hopefully it'll continue to grow and be one day, you know, really massive. And a game in a league that girls can aspire to play in and want to play for these Super League clubs.
So, Andrea Dobson there. That's a hell of a career she's had.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to Andrea Dobson for joining us on this week's show. That's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show. But just before we go, just a couple of matters arising. We spoke earlier about coaches leaving the sport to join another code. Anything to worry about with regards to that?
I don't think so. I don't know. At the end of the day, it's two, isn't it? It's Martin Gleeson and Sean Long.
Why do they always do things together?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. But I think it's just, you know, if someone wants to pursue a different challenge and a different path in life, it doesn't necessarily mean that rugby league's going down the pan. And
actually,
look,
quite the reverse. It means that the rugby union people
are seeing
what's happening.
By the way, Saints have got a damn good replacement.
I mean, I was told that when Martin Gleeson went for an interview at Wasps, he went in and showed that they talked about his attacking ideas, and he showed them on a laptop, or, you know, projected onto a screen, and they were absolutely blown away.
Really?
It was not anything that they'd seen before, and I think that's really fascinating, yeah. Don't you?
Yeah.
I
know of other coaches,
yeah.
You know, assistants in Super League and things like that that would like to go, and they believe that they could make it, because I think there's just a bit of an attitude change with Union, isn't there, as well? They
yeah.
do a lot more of our stuff.
But that's really interesting that Gleeson's leaving Salford and as an attacking coach at Wasps. We've just been saying earlier how great Salford have been this season,
yeah.
as an attacking side. What's going to happen to that now that Gleeson is no longer
there?
Well,
Watson was a halfback, wasn't he? You know, so I suspect he's had a fair say in what they've been doing.
Well, I'm sure,
well.
But Gleeson's had a big influence there.
Yeah,
you know, he's a smart
absolutely,
guy, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Sean Long made that comment, didn't he, about there are only about three decent attacking coaches in Super League. You know, typical Sean comment, that, in a way. You know, leaves with a bit of a stab at a few people in the game.
It's a blow that we lose people like that.
Oh, I think so.
You know, I mean, he's...
I'd rather remain in the game.
I'm sure there's potential for him to come back now, but Paul Cook is another. I think every time he goes to Union, it hurts me, because I just think there must be a place for blokes like that to be able to coach.
Well, he could have got the Hulk Air job, couldn't he, potentially, if Tony Smith hadn't been appointed?
Well, certainly a role in the setup you would have thought would have been perfect for him.
Well, on that note, that's nearly the end of the show. Any other business, League Express?
Monday? We've got loads of things in League X. So, you know, it's going to be a massive weekend of action, isn't it, this weekend? And we'll have absolutely everything. Also, State of Origin this weekend, of course. That will be in League Express full report. There's internationals down under. Tonga playing New Zealand. We'll have a report from New Zealand of that game, plus the Pacific test matches as well being played. So it's going to be a real big thing, as well as, of course, Super League Championship and League One and everything you could wish for.
Which hopefully will be on telly as well, those internationals.
We're not sure.
Social media campaign started
we're
up this week
sure.
all about it. Yeah. Aaron, The Guardian, anything coming up?
Oh, I'm going to Ealing tomorrow.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm really excited about driving there and back in a day.
In a day?
To drag
well,
me.
Well, I say in a day. It won't be in a day because it'll be the early hours of Friday morning
tried
when
to,
I get back.
Tried to drag me along to drive.
I did. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
And Parker, anything coming up for you? Back chat?
Wow. Back chat this week. We had Ian Blees, who was very, very good, talking about Salford. We're quite open about it, to be honest. We had Alan Kilshaw and Matt.
And well, next week, we're going to have Ralph Rimmer on, aren't we?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be interesting.
There we go. A big thank you to Matthew Shaw for joining us, and Aaron Barrow, of course, and Mr. Martin Sadler.
Thank you.
And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.
Cheers.